I know what the answer should be. The answer should be really straightforward. And I know you'll come back and say to me, this is a straightforward, easy answer. And I know the answer should be, it's about the family that you're born into. But what does it take, really take, to be king? I only ask because a few years ago, after I'd finished my PhD, I went into the bank and asked them if they would update my title. And the nice lady behind the desk started scrolling through the titles that were available to me. You know, there's the usual ones. There's Mr., Miss., Ms., Mrs. There's Admiral and Colonel and Captain. And then there were a few, you know, less usual ones. There was Staff Sergeant and Lieutenant Wren. And then she asked if I would like to be king. And then she turned the screen to me, and there it was. Underneath President was King. I declined, and we laughed at it, and she carried on until she found the appropriate title. But what if I'd said yes? I guess I would have a bank card now that said King Steve Langford. Yeah. Now, today is the festival that we celebrate Christ the King. A festival that marks the end of the church year and all that has gone before, all the teaching that has gone through the summer from Pentecost until now. And we stand on the verge of starting a new year, which always begins with Advent. And so as we come to celebrate the festival of Christ the King, we join the lectionary readings for today, and we join at a portion of John's Gospel. And we join with the question, what makes a king? Now, this portion of John's Gospel appears shortly after Jesus' arrest. And having been questioned by Caiaphas, the high priests carry him off and take him to Pilate. And they do that for two reasons. The first is they want him crucified, and the second is they can't do it themselves. They don't have the authority. But notice there are a couple of other things going on here in John's Gospel. Notice, first of all, that Pilate doesn't take the charges for granted, which suggests he is his own man. He doesn't take their word for it or their claims as necessarily having any authority. This begins to flag up a question of authority, which we'll come back to later. And then notice the conversation that actually goes on here. Notice that nobody actually seems to answer a question. If in today's world a politician is defined by a person by the fact that they never answer a question, they only ever answer the question that they want to answer, not the one you're putting, this passage in John's Gospel is a bag of politicians. Let me lead you through the conversation with the subtext that goes underneath of it. It begins with Pilate to the Jewish leaders. What charges are you bringing? In other words, I've agreed to let you have a cohort of soldiers to go off and arrest this man, and now you bring him to me. Now justify it. Then Jewish leaders say to Pilate, we would not have brought him to you. In other words, what do you think we want? This is a criminal. That's why you gave us a cohort of soldiers, so we might go and overpower him, and we might arrest him. Oh, and by the way, you also know we want him executed, and we can't do that. Now, just get on with what we want you to do. So Pilate goes to Jesus. Are you a king? Are their accusations true? Jesus is clever at this moment, and he replies, is that your idea or someone else's? In other words, do you have your own mind? Or do you just do what people tell you to do? What do you think? Now, the answer that Pilate comes up with is important, because it's important because what comes next? Because if the idea is his, then it's likely that he sees Jesus as a political king, as one who will be a threat to Caesar. And thus, this is treason, and therefore it's pretty straightforward to agree to his execution. However, if the idea was not his, the understanding is different. The question comes from the Jewish leaders themselves, in which case he is a theological king. He's a messianic king, and that threatens more their positions than it does his. But Pilate doesn't answer. He just dodges the question. He just says to Jesus, "Am I a Jew?" In other words, what do you think? Do you think I would listen to them? I'm certainly not one of them. I'm better than them. I'm the governor. Can't you tell? Because they bring you to me. But Pilate's glossing over something here, and I've already mentioned it, and that is the fact that if you were to go back earlier in the story, you would see that to arrest Jesus, a cohort of soldiers had turned up. And they wouldn't have gone unless they'd been authorized to go by Pilate. And so he might dismiss the idea that he's listening to the people who have come to him. But he's listening enough to send the soldiers that they request. And so Pilate asks, "What have you done?" And Jesus doesn't reply. In other words, without saying anything, he says, "Don't you know? If you don't know, why not? You're supposed to be the one who's in charge here." You can almost hear the sigh of frustration at this point as Jesus says to Pilate, "Look, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would have prevented my arrest by the Jewish leaders. No, my kingdom is a..." Wrong place. If you're looking to the Jewish authorities, they're not going to give it to you. My authority comes from elsewhere. Pilate misses the subtlety of this and just jumps on the decoration. "So you are a king then?" He's got it made for him. Suddenly Jesus has admitted it. But there's a sense of irony here. Pilate might be saying inwardly, "There, that wasn't so hard, was it?" But actually, there's something missing here, because if Jesus truly is king, then he's a king who's been rejected by his own people. They've had him arrested and brought him to the Roman governor because they want him executed. And so he has no credibility or authority amongst them. He is a king who's become subject to the authority of a governor who represents an invading army, someone who's come over and are now levying a huge amount of taxes on this nation and taking it away to Rome. In verse 38, Pilate might say, "You are a king." In other words, "You're not mine." And Jesus continues to say, "I come to testify to the truth." In other words, "I'm going to show you things that you can't see at the moment." In other words, whilst it looks like I'm a king without credibility, without authority, actually the authority I have and the credibility I have is immense. The amount of authority that I have is more than you will ever have. In other words, I'm going to show the world what sort of people these leaders are. These people whose responsibility it is to keep the faith. to keep us in touch with God. They've missed what's going on here. And Jesus continues, everyone who is on the side of truth listens to me. And then Pilate says, what is truth? And this is the crux of the matter here. Because notice that Pilate asks, what is truth? Not is what is the truth, not what is actually going on here, but what is truth? And this is significant. Because when you start to think about it, in this 21st century, truth is ambiguous. To simply say something is true doesn't necessarily make it so. If I'd said, yes, I'll have king, please, I would have a bank card with king on it, but it wouldn't necessarily make me a king. When in Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass, Alice comes upon Humpty Dumpty, they have a conversation, and Humpty Dumpty says, words mean what I want them to mean. In our day and age, truth can mean what we want it to mean. For truth to be real, it has to be received. To accept, for something to be true for us, we have to accept some fact, some claim, some argument that is offered to us. And for that to be true, it doesn't just have to be offered to us, we have to receive it and accept it and live as if it is genuine, true. And not everyone accepts what is given to them, even though a gathered community might say something is true. I'll give you an example of that. There are plenty of photographs on the internet around of the earth showing it is a globe. There are plenty of mathematical models and scientific experiments that show the earth is a globe and revolves around the sun. That didn't stop 200 delegates in 2018 gathering in Birmingham for a conference run by the British branch of the Flat Earth Society. The Flat Earth Society still exists. It's still across the world. Has people who sign up to it. Truth is a slippery thing. It has to be received. As it is with authority. For authority to have any credence, it has to be accepted. Just because the Bible points to Jesus as king, and there is, you know, the biblical model is that Jesus is king. And key amongst that is Matthew's gospel. Matthew's gospel makes a consistent argument all the way through it. For Jesus being king. It's the whole theme that's going through Matthew's gospel. When it comes down to the authority that Jesus has as king, in the world we live in, it is only the authority we give him. Now, I know there's more to it than that, and I know that actually the authority of Jesus goes way beyond anything we could give him. Jesus is king. But unless we acknowledge that authority and receive him as king, his position is meaningless to us. At least meaningless at the moment. There will come a time when it becomes very important. But let me explain what I mean. If a policeman stands in the road and signals to you to stop, his authority is in his uniform and the law that sits behind him to give him that authority to say, no, you must stop. If you decide to ignore him, you strip him of that authority. Now, you'll pay for it later, doubtless. But in that moment, you strip him of that authority because you refuse to give it. Fail to stop. That same argument can be made of Jesus. There's going to be a come a time when we will have to bow to that authority. But in this moment and in this point, here and now, as we face the question of Jesus' kingship, it's only if we give him the authority that it becomes real. Real in us as individuals, real in us as a church. There's something happening here. There's something in this conversation that we see in John's Gospel where Jesus is effectively undermining the position of the Jewish leaders. The people who've been given the responsibility to ensure that people of God have a relationship with him, and that relationship is secure. These people should have realized who Jesus is. They're the very people who are looking for the coming of the king, who are looking for the coming of the Messiah. And they've missed it. And they've missed it not just in his coming, they've missed it throughout his ministry. The gospel stories, as we read them, again and again and again, say that the people are amazed by the authority that Jesus has as he teaches. Again and again we see examples of Jesus healing the sick, raising the dead, the lame walk, lepers are made clean. There are stories in the gospel of how Jesus has power over the natural forces. He walks on water. He calms the storm. And so leading up to this point where they've had him arrested and taken before Pilate, there is plenty of opportunity to see, for those who have eyes open, Jesus' authority. And yet they refuse to give it. And now here in a conversation with Pilate, in a conversation over kingship, the nature of truth crops up. And Jesus begins to unmask the reality of Pilate's authority, an authority that will eventually end up with Pilate's assent to Jesus being crucified, even though he can find no case against him. Here we have a question about authority that comes out of a question about truth and about whether it is received. Now, I know there's a danger here. I know there's a path where we could go down as Christian believers, as followers of Jesus. The path is antinomianism. That's a posh word. And it means actually only accepting the authority of Jesus. And then only the bit that talks about his grace and his mercy, not about his judgment and the rules we should live by. And antinomianism was really big in the 1800s. And it basically said, we live by the grace of God, and therefore we're not judged by the way the world judges things. We judge things differently. The first minister on that list, on the wall over there, fell into this trap. During his short time here, his servant fell pregnant. And the church could never quite work out whether it was his baby or his son's baby. But there were a group of the people in the church who liked him so much, they said, we're not judged by this world. He's a good guy. We're not judged by the convention of the time or whatever. And they wanted him to remain minister. They were wrong. They were wrong then, they're wrong now, and thankfully there was a bigger chunk within the church that said they were wrong then. And the minister left, took a few people with him. But he left because he wouldn't live under the authority of the time. He didn't give authority to its due place. He didn't give authority to the whole canon of Scripture, to all that Jesus stands for. He did eventually give authority to the church because they got rid of him. We can't escape the fact in this conversation in John's Gospel, there's a conversation between Jesus and Peter, between Jesus and Pilate, that's all about authority. And it points to the fact that Jesus has authority that we attribute to him. And that attributation comes in parts. If we're the people who claim we are, if we are claimed to be followers of Jesus, then the first order of the day is to make Jesus king. It's to make him ruler of our lives. To declare that he is truly king. He is the Son of God. By his very nature, he is king. He is part of the Trinity that makes up the Godhead. Jesus is king because he's part of God. And the second order of the day is to receive that. And so attribute to him the authority that shapes our lives. To live in such a way that we're always asking the question, what would Jesus have us do here? How would Jesus handle this situation? Where is Jesus in this crisis, in this time of pain, and how is he leading us through? How can I trust in Jesus now? Because he's here. As I said, this is the festival of Christ the King. It's the final festival of the church year. It marks the culmination of a whole year's worth of teaching and exhortation. And it comes down to this question. What will we do with Jesus? Will we receive him as king in the here and now? If in doing so, bow to his authority, and in doing so, shape our lives by the way he lives and by the values he stands for and we see described to us by the gospel writers? Will we allow Jesus to be king? And so be transformed into the people that God knows we can be. The people of God. With all the markers that we live under the authority of Jesus. And so it leaves me wondering, I wonder if we have the courage to actually do that. To give Jesus that level of authority. And I wonder whether we're willing to make the changes that will inevitably entail. And I wonder where that will lead. I wonder where we will be a year from now when we announce again that Jesus is King. Amen.